In the walking practice, I ask that you open to the experience of being available while moving. This afternoon, when we have time for questions and sharing of experience, maybe one or two of you could share what it was like for you as a new experience of having this consideration of being available in the moment while walking, available to the moment, available to respond to the moment as an attitude when walking. This approach to practice has been my approach to practice from the very beginning. There were various conditions that led to me having a non-doing approach to practice. And in part that it was having a kind of natural access to concentration that I wasn't determined to get more concentrated or have those kinds of experiences that people were striving for, because they had happened to me spontaneously, actually, from a fairly early age. So that was very fortunate in that way. I had many other challenges, believe you me, which is the worst was how tense my body was, and even to this day is in many ways. So we each have our own challenges, but it allowed me to explore an avenue that I have for these last number of years been sharing with others. Now that we have had this sitting and walking experience with being available, we have our taste. We have our taste. So will you trust your taste, or will you allow your ego to take it over and I'm going to do this. I've got this taste. I like this. I want more of it. And the ego takes over. It's just the nature of ego. The ego's not our enemy. It's just a little self-centered. It can't imagine that it's not the most important thing at any given moment. So it thinks it's really trying to help, you know. But as we grow, the ego, and this is makes some people hard to believe, but the ego actually does move out of its centeredness, its self-centeredness, and it actually moves into a new position in the whole map of the psyche. It's very interesting, and that's why liberation is possible, that it can do that. Buddha is such a great example. So non-doing, being available, a practice in a non-doing way, that we're not doing something, we're available for natural unfolding to happen. Had a nice taste to it for some of you, maybe. What gets in the way? If this is so naturally arising, then how come it doesn't naturally arise? It's a very fair question. I've been confronted by a number of people with that over the years. It doesn't naturally happen because we are in the way. We have habits of mind, habits coming from the ego, that get in the way. And what I have discovered in the last 15 years or so, that it is helpful for our getting out of our way to take certain vows. And these are vows of renunciation. And not only are they helpful on retreat as we are, but also very helpful in your daily life. They represent a whole practice in themselves, just as the arriving sequence represents an entire practice. All in itself, you could spend, you know, a month just doing the arriving sequence every day in your home practice. It goes on and on and deeper and deeper. So it is with these vows of renunciation. They are on the surface good, but they're good as we get more familiar with them. And then as they start to flower, they're good, as the Buddha was saying about practice, good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end, this full flowering. So I say it this way for you to understand the opportunity for allowing unfolding to happen naturally in our lives, such that we do get to participate in life. We get to co-create a little in our dancing with life. The first of these three is the renunciation of judging mind. Judging mind is that aspect that will, of the ego that will say good or bad, and do it in such a way that it's creating a self that's good or bad. Likewise, there is comparing mind, which is better than or worse than. And again, it's the creating of a self that is better than or worse than. The Buddha was so cautious about this that he said, avoid all comparing mind, better than, worse than, or even the same as. Stay out of the neighborhood. So I take that to heart. And then the third of these renunciation vows is renouncing fixing mind. Fixing mind is that way of moving into a contracted self where we have an experience and we find it through judging or comparing or just through a kind of, we've already labeled it needing fixing. It doesn't fit our idea, and we move to fixing it. So the mind's restless. And rather than getting to know restless mind is like this, which is what the Venerable Sumedho teaches, which has so affected me, that we have a, we want to fix this restless mind, and then we can't fix it. And then the mind's more restless. And now it's got judging in there as well, as, and on, we have this explosion of contractions, of clinging, of demands. Sometimes they're hidden demands and we don't even notice that we're demanding, and yet we're demanding like crazy. So people will say to me, but Philip, I do want to change. I do want to get better. And the answer is yes, we all do. We all aspire to have our practice grow. But the reactive mind trying to fix is lacks the capacity for recognition as to what's needed. It lacks the compassion. It lacks all the paramis of patience and persistence. It's reactive. It's against something. It's not being with, and it's not being available to it and to know it from the inside, and therefore releasing it from the inside. The inside may be coming from just patience with it, where it releases itself, or there's insight naturally arises, and it changes because of that. It changes because of practice. But rather, we, the ego, are going to fix this. And all these different committee members of our ego that have different ways that they want to fix it and all of this. And so it becomes really a kind of mental storm. And that is the challenge of this fixing mind. And people say, but you have to use judging. You have to use comparing. You do fixing. And yes, yes, yes. But we're doing it from discernment. 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 Discernment is this ability that we really grow in our practice to see what is wholesome and unwholesome. So is our motivation wholesome or unwholesome? Is this activity a wholesome or unwholesome activity for our own well-being and for the well-being of others, for onward leading versus causing harm, which is throwing people off the path? And then the discernment sees what's skillful and unskillful. It may look like judging and comparing, but what's absent is the creating of a self. It's got an emptiness at its core. It's got a non-grasping at its core. Discerning is leads to wisdom and compassion. And the more we have allowed the flowering of wisdom and compassion, the more discernment is acute, that it's really like that the recognition of mindfulness gets really clear. And the sense of realization that's necessary to we realize that we have choice to choose non-suffering, that becomes very alive and real to us. I mean, really, it's mysterious how it all comes about, but it's all very practical. And then that resolve to act, that power to act is there because we're not in reactive mind. Reactive mind, it lacks wisdom. It lacks compassion. It doesn't do, it's not a very effective way to develop our practice, to allow our practice to flower in the natural way it will flower. You've all had many moments of discernment. If you had not, you would never have grown in the way that would allow you to be interested in the Dhamma. And one can take care of oneself from reactive mind, but in life, one can still be primarily in reactive mind and take care of oneself, but it's a lot less fun. It's a lot less fun. And all sorts of folks, not just folks that have had a trauma or difficult background, a reactive mind can, it's indiscriminatory that way. It can be, people are so attached to how smart they are. And they are very smart, and they've really flourished, and being smart in ways, but they're still stuck in reactive mind. It's independent of our usual things about this. So discernment is able to weigh something in its wisdom and its skillfulness. It's able to weigh, to appraise, and see the appropriate response. And why does it see the appropriate response? Because it's infused with wisdom and compassion, and it's growing wisdom and compassion. So next sit, we're going to be opening to that more after we take these vows. So I'm going to ask everyone, while you're still your own silence, but I'm going to ask you to say it out loud, unless you're in some situation it would sound weird to the person you're sharing this space with. Although it might thrill them to hear you saying this, because we're going to be saying out loud our renunciations. And the renunciation is just for the length of the retreat. At the end of this retreat, I will release you from these vows. But for this retreat, and it's like you're trying them on. It's like someone's letting you take an automobile you're thinking about buying. They let you take it home for the weekend and drive it, see how it feels. So we'll see how we feel having these three guideposts, these three creating conditions in our approach to life. So there will be different parts. So I will say there will be three or four parts to each of these. For the duration of this retreat, I renounce judging mind as best I am able. For the duration of this retreat, I renounce comparing mind as best I am able. For the duration of this retreat, I renounce fixing mind as best I am able. As best I am able is not an excuse or a spiritual bypass, but rather a realistic grounding in our sincerity of our practice, our aspiration of our practice, while aligning with that we are only able to do what we can do. So as best I am able is reflecting this inner dignity, this humility, and this integrity. If we use perfection as the measurement, we get defensive, we go to denial, we stop doing it. Our integrity is what allows, as best I'm able, to work. And it's building this muscle of integrity, having integrity in the moments of our life with ourselves before we actually are having integrity with another. And the more we have integrity with ourselves, the more we're going to act with integrity and less likely to cause harm to another or let others cause harm to us, because we've got an inner felt sense that's different. And we go, this isn't right. And we say no. We have the right to say no, because our dignity, that intuition that comes from that inner dignity, because this isn't right, and we can say no. So it is both protective of others and protective of ourselves.